Where's Jillian? Get Jillian up here. While we're waiting for Jillian to be escorted to the stage, Charles, let me begin with a question to you. What is your hope for this film? I mean, you talk in this film that the people in power who ever saw this are still in power. What do you want to happen as this film goes out in the world?
Well, I hope that the American people can gracefully bring them off stage. Or perhaps not so gracefully, if that's necessary. I hope that certainly this film is one of many attempts to bring these issues to light and to show the American people, and indeed the global population, the nature of importance of these issues, and I hope that that will lead to action which in this case I think has to be led by the population rather than by our leaders.
We're joined by Jillian Tett, who you saw in the film. She just saw it for the first time. Jillian, I'll get to you in a moment. You think about, I'm going to ask you what you thought of this film after seeing it for the first time. But while you think about that, let me ask Audrey a question. Audrey, what was it like getting these people to be interviewed, and the people that you couldn't get to be interviewed, what was that like?
There were many more times in this film than in No One in Sight. And with the people, I'm sure, now you can wonder why some of these people agreed. And I think it's because they've never been challenged before and just assumed that we were, going to them for their expertise. And then with the people who declined, like I said, I just pushed them to get a solid answer, a solid no. And in the majority of cases, we did. I just wanted to have a clear record of that.
So Jillian, let me ask you, you've watched this for the first time, what are your reactions to watching the film?
Well, what I'd like to say is this, that as someone who works in the communications business, before I moved to my current role, which is basically running the editorial side of the FT in the US, I was basically running our global markets coverage. And I did that for about 5 years, and something used to frustrate me enormously was just how difficult it was to take these very complicated, very specialist topics and terms and ideas and communicate it to other people. And you had an area of activity that was incredibly important for the global economy, but very, very hard to communicate. And I think that something that Charles has done incredibly effectively is take this geeky stuff, this very complex stuff, and actually try and communicate its core essence to a much wider audience. And I just wish this had been made, or some version of this had been made 5 years ago. Because we might not be able to say. One other thing I want to say, which I feel very, very strongly indeed, which is that it's very tempting when you take a topic like CDOs, which seems kind of dull and geeky and boring, and you kind of stick it in the back page of the FT or whatever, to think if you're someone who isn't a banker, well, hey, it's dull and geeky and boring, just leave it to the technical experts. And precisely because technical experts are not used to being questioned, because most people aren't looking at what they're doing, they kind of get on and do their stuff, and you kind of leave the geeks in the little silos. We now know in finance that that's very, very dangerous. But the key point I'd like to leave you with is how many other geeky areas of activity are there in society today, where once again people are averting their eyes? I mean, how many people actually knew what was happening in, say, the Gulf of Mexico before the BP thing blew up? And how many other areas is there actually a crying need for people to make serious films looking at the Gulf? Dull, geeky, technical areas where experts are not used to being challenged.
Very good.
pitch you on this film.
We have about 10 minutes to take some questions, so if you've got some good ones, please raise your hand. Yes, you, sir. Was there anyone interviewed who pulled out?
We have them sign a release form before they do.
Several people tried to pull out. Martin, the day after his interview, Martin Feldstein wrote me an email saying, I rescind my permission to use this interview, but we have his document, so.
This is what you meant about lawyers coming in handy.
Damn straight.
Question in the back, you, sir.
Doctors, engineers, of which I am one, are liable for their mistakes. Why does it appear that there is no liability here?
Do you think money could have something to do with it?
You, sir, in the middle.
Thank you for the question. What brought me to that idea was that I actually witnessed the beginnings of this when I myself was an academic. I long ago and far away, I was a policy wonk. I got a PhD in political science from MIT. And I did economic policy, and I began noticing some of my professors popping up as like an expert witness in an antitrust case or a regulatory proceeding. And over time, I kept in touch with academia, and I have a number of friends who are academics. Over time, I noticed that this was becoming a more serious problem. And then when this crisis occurred, I was already alert to it, and then I started looking into it and found what you saw, and much more, by the way. I mean, I could fill a whole movie with academics who do this. The Law and Economics Consulting Group, which is one of the four firms that are mentioned in that section of the film, is a $300 million a year publicly held company. This is a billion-dollar industry. And if you look at their website might change soon, I have a feeling. But as of a few days ago, if you looked at their website, they would list all of the academic experts you can hire. And if you look at them, it's, you know, a lot of very serious people. You, sir. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know President Obama. I've met him once in Audrey's company for about a minute. Certainly, once he made the personnel appointments that he made, the die was cast. The question is, why did he make those personnel appointments? And then also, 2 years later, why hasn't he fired some of them? And I don't know the answer to that question. I really don't. And I've had very long discussions with a number of people about that question, some of whom have asserted to me, these are politically sophisticated, involved people, have asserted to me that actually, in their belief, it is contrary to his political self-interest to have done what he has done, and that he could have gotten away, more than gotten away, with becoming more serious. I'd like to ask Jillian what her view of this is, because this is her professional beat now.
Why did President Obama not do more? I think it's partly because he was trying to attack many targets at once, and to crack the financial industry would require a pretty strong, concerted focus, but also at the end of the day, because they are extraordinarily powerful. And before I became a journalist, I actually trained as a social anthropologist and worked in academia. And one of the thinkers who had a great impact on me was a man called Pierre Bourdieu, the French anthropologist. He used to argue that the way that elites gain power is not really by controlling the means of production, i.e. the money, but by controlling the cognitive map, how we think. And that really plays into John's point about the academic role in all this and the degree to which you had academics who were basically reinforcing and supporting a cognitive map which served the financial industry very well. And there is this very powerful nexus of thinkers, of politicians, of idea people, and of money men that have been working together, and a few money women, but not many of them, that have been working together in recent years to create the system.
And maybe one or two more questions. Yes, you've been there. I'm going to just cut you off there just in the interest of time, but do you want to ask a question or we can... Maybe I can take what you said about bankers and the extent to which, how much is government, do you think, a puppet of larger financial...
Well, I would say that the American government, the United States government, has become regrettably more so, and the U.S. political system has become regrettably more so over time, but I don't think that it's a complete or irreversible process. There have been times before American history when things have gotten out of hand in some direction, and the American people have come to realize that and have asserted themselves, and I don't think that that's out of the question. I also, by the way, don't think that President Obama is... or has to be a complete puppet or servant of the financial services industry. I think that if he found the, I don't know what it would be, the courage, you know, again, I can't psychoanalyze him, but it is within his capacity to do more than he has done, much more than he has done.
This film is going to be opening in theaters in U.S. and Canada this fall. We certainly expect it to be one of the most talked about films of the fall. You have a real power as one of the first audiences to see this film in North America to spread the word with your Facebook and Twitter and blogs. So go out there and do it. We thank you for coming. We thanks especially to Jillian Aubrey.
Thank you.